on today's Compassion Radio.
She's probably 6 or 7 weeks old and still under 5 pounds. Mm. She was not nourished. She was not cared for. But she's alive, yeah. And she is the most intense little baby.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
From the back streets of Baghdad to the bustling streets of Johannesburg, the Word of God is being proclaimed and His compassion is being demonstrated. And this is the daily ministry broadcast journal that gives you a word's eye view. Welcome to Compassion Radio. Norm Nelson frequently talks about what he calls the ministry of showing up. Just being there, showing someone how much you care about them can mean more than you'll ever know. We've had the privilege of showing up and partnering with the Door of Hope Ministry outside Johannesburg, South Africa for a number of years now. And once again today, we're going to return to a previously aired broadcast where Norm and his wife, Cher, sat down in the studio and talked about their experience in the nursery. Here's Norm to get us started.
Honey, you were in the city of Johannesburg, South Africa about 15 years ago, and it was a very different place in those days. Just how would you describe Johannesburg then and now?
Well, I think you're talking about downtown Johannesburg, which was a very different experience then. We were staying in a beautiful hotel. We were there on a music mission. We were doing local television in Johannesburg, which was a big deal because it covers the whole of not just South Africa country, but the whole bottom portion of Africa. Downtown shopping was wonderful. South Africa was different than it is now, but in the old apartheid days, downtown was very safe. You could walk around at night, enjoy the shop windows. It was a booming metropolis.
Well, it's done a 180-degree turnaround, hasn't it? Because you would not walk around in Johannesburg at night at all.
Not at all. What was funny was that when we were going, I was trying to describe to you the hotel that we had stayed at in downtown Johannesburg so that we could look it up again, and you couldn't find the name of the hotel anywhere. Well, the reason is because the hotel has completely gone out of business. There's been such white flight from Johannesburg proper that it is totally devoid of actual functioning businesses and has just totally been taken over by the crime element.
You just used, I think, a really important word. I suppose that the word that we heard most often in that city was the word crime. Honey, is there a tangible fear of crime in the places that we visited? Did you feel that fear as we walked around and got acquainted with the city?
Yes and no. I never felt threatened when we were there. And yet, watching what the very reasonable people that we were spending time with had to go through in order to secure themselves, you began to get a real feeling of you need to watch over your shoulder and be aware of your surroundings and be cautious and be thoughtful. And there was not one person that we came in contact with that did not have a personal story of something that had happened. So it wasn't just, ooh, we live in a dangerous place, we have to be so careful. There were real live examples of really sad and frightening things that had happened to the people that we were with. I mean, it's not just being surrounded by walls. Every house is sort of on a compound.
And razor wire.
Right. It wasn't just having to have razor wire. It wasn't just having to have electric gates, but learning how to drive up to your electric gate and be prepared to go on by and not enter your driveway if you see someone rushing up to try to get in at the same time. It's timing things so carefully.
They would not pull into their driveway as the electric gate moved back, because if they were accosted by somebody, then they would have to back out in order to get going forward to make their escape, and that's too late.
Right.
And so, you know, thinking constantly about the pressure of crime and thinking about your own personal safety has to really be a wearing thing on people who live there.
I think the thing that made the most impact on me was that there was no place to go home.
Yeah.
There was no safe area of the city to go back to. Okay, now we've been downtown, or now we've been in the dangerous parts. Now let's go home where it's safe. There is no safe.
Yeah, there is no safe. And, of course, out and around in the outlying areas, out in the townships and out in the squatters camp areas, there is there, too, real danger. In fact, when I made that trip to Koza, which is one of the townships on the outskirts of town, that was one of the scariest places I've ever been in my life, to be surrounded by big, young black men to keep my skin color hidden from those who were all around us. And, of course, this is a very densely populated place with people out in the streets, to be crouching down in the backseat of that car and to be told before we went in there about how gangs come up to your car and fire through the back window, sending a bullet through your neck or through your back. Well, that's what it was like there in Tokoza and in Johannesburg in general. Honey, we were in Johannesburg, of course, because of the Door of Hope Project. What exactly is the Door of Hope?
Well, it is the most wonderful thing we've experienced in a long time, is what it is. Door of Hope is a rescue project for babies that would otherwise be discarded. There is a small mission church in this area where people said no church could possibly survive because it is the area of Johannesburg proper where so many different nationalities and tribes and peoples have come together hoping for what would be here the great American dream. There is the great African dream of employment. Within this little mission church, there are 16 different countries, tribes, nationalities represented, all with some tribal hatred of each other.
Right.
But God has knit them together. It's a little mission church compound. There are four buildings, I think, on the property, surrounded by a full, would you call it a plaster wall?
Yes,
sort of an adobe wall with razor wire on top. These people who came down to start this little church and were told that they could not possibly do this have done it. While being down there, started to hear the stories about babies that were being abandoned, either in dumpsters or in sewers, at the rate of 30 a month on average.
And Cheryl said some months, it's over 100.
That's right. Yeah. But the important thing that they heard was that many of these babies were alive when abandoned.
Yeah.
And they just said, we got to do something. So what were they going to do? They can't go door to door and ask, do you have any babies you're going to discard? They can't patrol all the sewers and all the garbage dumpsters. So what they did was cut a hole in this adobe wall, put a door, just a lift up.
It's hinged at the top.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know any other word to describe it except it's sort of a mailbox door reversed.
Yeah.
Instead of pulling it down, you would pull it up. On the inside is this beautifully constructed by their people, a stainless steel bin, which is beautifully padded on the bottom. And a woman can come in total anonymity because there's no one that can see out from the compound, lift up this door, place a baby in, and the weight of the baby on the padding sets off a sensor underneath that sets off an alarm in the compound, and somebody comes rushing to retrieve this baby.
So the baby is not in that bin for more than about a minute, actually.
In fact, the last baby that was put there was almost mobbed by people rushing to the bin to try to rescue it because they heard the alarm go off in the compound. It is the most ingenious thing I've ever seen, constructed out of basically nothing to give life to little children that would otherwise die. There are people who care enough to rescue these little ones who are the rejects of society because most of them are what they would call colored.
Yeah.
They are not pure black. They are not pure white. They are a mix of all kinds of things. Now, within the babies that have been rescued, we know that one is some brand of Asian and black. One is some brand of perhaps Indian, Pakistani, Sri Lankan, whatever, probably Indian and black. These are the worst of the worst to find a place in society. And yet this combination of multiple ethnicities within Africa have come together to say, we don't care. Let's love them. Let's bring them up in the Lord.
That's right. There is a law in South Africa that if the child is left unattended by its parent for 2 months, then that baby is legally considered to be an abandoned child. And then that sets in motion a whole set of circumstances and gives the baby a status which makes certain things possible. So
It's as complicated there as it is here to get the babies free for adoption. But God is doing some beautiful things there.
Now, honey, we're talking about the babies, and we had an opportunity to get especially close to four of these little tykes, and we got really attached to them. In fact, we took them home with us for a weekend. I say home. We took them to Cheryl Allen's home where we were staying. And over that weekend, we were able to provide care for the babies ourselves. And that was because one of the staff members really did need a break from the babies. So we got close to four of these babies. And let me just mention four names to you. And I want you to give a response to each of these names. First of all, Georgina.
Georgina is a kick. Now, first of all, she's an interesting story because she was almost two when she was stuffed into this box that is basically built for a brand new baby. And what we learned about her was that she was so withdrawn, so shy, so nobody could get her to speak, to smile, to do anything for the longest time. Georgina is the little mother of all of the babies now. What would you call
her? She's
a
mother with her thumb in her mouth, I must say.
She is. With the little grin around the edges of the thumb.
Yeah, she's right.
Always, she has this very shy smile, but she looks like she has the weight of the world on 60-year-old shoulders, except that the body is only 2 years old. But she is so protective of the babies, and she is so attached to Cheryl.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, she calls the family that has given up their home, moved their very few worldly goods into this home. She calls her mama because she hears the boys, Margaret's own boys, call her mama.
Such a blessing today to hear Cher recount her experience at the Door of Hope in Johannesburg, South Africa. Here's a quick comment from Norm on how you can make a huge difference in the life of a precious little one right here, right now.
My friend, did you know that you can save a baby's life today by making a contribution to our compassion project known as the Door of Hope? Approximately 60 infants in a month are abandoned by desperate mothers and found in garbage dumpsters, in toilets, storm drains, shoeboxes, along roadsides, and in city parks. Now you may ask, how could a mother do such a thing? I do know this. Two things are certain. One, the babies are blameless victims. And two, the babies deserve a chance at life. Cheryl Allen, who was then the pastor of the small Berea Baptist Church in the Berea Hillbrow area of Johannesburg, one of the most dangerous areas in the city, couldn't turn away once she was aware of this terrible situation. Church members had cut a hole through the high wall that protects the church's property in this very tough neighborhood. They had placed a padded bin inside that hole. They wired the bin so that an alarm sounded in the church compound when even the tiniest baby was placed in it. And then they hung hinged doors over the bin. The outside door read, "The Door of Hope." And when the alarm sounded, personnel in the church rushed out to the bin and they rescued the babies. Well, it worked. Babies began to appear in the Door of Hope. In fact, it worked so well that soon there were too many babies to care for within the small house on the church property. And that's where this ministry, Compassion Radio, became involved. We committed to raise enough money for the Door of Hope to purchase a home in a safe, clean suburb where the growing number of toddlers could be accommodated and cared for. We didn't have the money, but we made the pledge. And thanks to compassionate partners just like you, we raised the money that was needed for the Door of Hope first baby house. At that time, less than 100 babies had been rescued. Today, a second and a third house have been added. In addition, the majority of those babies have been adopted by Christian families in South Africa, and they're being raised to serve the Lord and affect the future of South Africa. My friend, it doesn't get any better than this. Now, wouldn't you like to be a part of this great story? The need for more baby food and diapers, more clothing, more baby bottles, more blankets, more medical supplies, more everything in order to provide the very best in baby and child care and to keep the baby houses in tip-top shape. What I'm doing today is inviting you to take a simple action of compassion and to send the best contribution that you can send to rescue little ones who have been knit together by God and allowed by Him to breathe the breath of life. I just hope that you'll consider how valuable these abandoned little babies are to our Heavenly Father. He loves each one. So, will you love and care for them as He does? Oh, be a part of the Door of Hope Project. Send your gift today and know that God will be pleased.
You can reach us anytime, anywhere by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Or, of course, online, safe and secure at CompassionRadio.com. I'll repeat this information, plus give our mailing address towards the end of the broadcast. Right now, let's get back to Norman Scher.
Then there's Josh.
Oh, how do you describe Josh?
Eyes.
Oh, he's all eyes and all motion. Now, the interesting thing about Josh is that what they have found out about the mother is that she was a nightclubber.
Yeah.
And Josh was a little older when he was abandoned and evidently had spent most of his nights in the nightclubs with his mother. And I think probably while he was an infant and before he started to crawl and be mobile, it was probably possible for her to keep him with her, and he wasn't any trouble, and he's very open, very willing to go to anybody. So I think he was probably cared for and paid attention to by a lot of people. But his schedule was totally reversed. He was up all night and slept all day, which evidently was the schedule his mom kept.
That's the nightclub scenario.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And music begins and Josh starts to dance. I mean, there is not one part of his body that's not in motion. He loves music.
Yeah.
But he is a climber. He is, I would guess, destined to be some kind of an acrobat. He just is into everything.
Furious
there is
as all
nothing
get out.
That doesn't attract his attention, that he doesn't want to take apart, get into, mess around with. But, oh, he's all eyes, just big, alive, energetic eyes.
Piercing.
Yep.
Then there's Nathan, and I say Nathan, and maybe you can hear a special quality in my voice. I got real close to Nathan for some reason when we first arrived there.
Yep.
He was the first baby that I had any contact with, and he was laying in his crib, staring up, not feeling very well, had a very concerned and worried look on his little face, and I bent over that crib, and I stuck my finger down and started to rub his cheek. And he gave me a little smile, and it was all over, honey, as far as Nathan and Norm are concerned. But Nathan has problems, and he is the dearest little thing, and yet we're so concerned about him.
We really are. Nathan started out with every strike against him. Nathan was abandoned by the side of the road. They don't know how long he was there, but when they found him, his face was completely blistered.
Yeah.
After he was delivered to the home, his poor little bottom completely peeled 3 different times. They didn't think they were ever going to get it healed. And the sound of traffic is terrifying to him.
Now, isn't that amazing that Josh, who was abandoned in a nightclub, dances to music, and Nathan, who was abandoned by the side of the road, tenses up and becomes jittery when traffic goes by? That is incredible to me.
Do we call this imprinting?
Yes, we do. I should also say that it's been a long time since Norm has been thrown up on, and even with the grandkids. But Nathan did it to
managed,
me.
Managed, right.
And I don't care. I love that little guy. I wish I could have him.
Nathan is a snuggle bug. He is just the most loving, gentle-mannered baby. Is not interested in being on his tummy to try to crawl at all. Much more happy to be on his back to be able to watch everything that's going on. But just the most loving little thing. But Nathan has ongoing problems. We don't know exactly what the lung problems are, but he was to be x-rayed the week after we left. We have not heard a report yet, but we did get a report yesterday, which was not encouraging about his health.
Yeah.
God really needs to do a miracle in this little guy's physiological being.
Deeply congested, and he was...
We had pneumonia when we left.
In many respects, miserable that whole weekend, and yet... At the same time, he just seemed to be trying to make the best of it and be responsive.
It's almost like, if I'm good, will you love me? Will you hold me?
Yeah. Okay, now get yourself together, honey. Oh. Then there's Ruthie.
Oh, dear. Ruthie, well, we lost our hearts to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was about that little girl. We walked in. The first time we saw her, she was asleep in a plastic bath pan that was fully padded because they're out of beds at the home. They desperately need beds. And she was so tiny. She's under 5 pounds. All that was showing was probably from her nose up. Everything else was swaddled. But that little face just entirely wiped me out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, We didn't learn a whole lot about her at that time. She was one that was abandoned in the bin. They don't know anything about the family. But when we were able to get the kids ready to take them home, she was crying at the time we went in. And, you know, a crying baby, you go pick a baby up.
Right.
Well, and the first time we had seen her, she was sleeping. So I just went over and picked her up. And the minute I picked her up, she stopped crying and just kind of went limp asleep. Mm. Well, two people rushed over to look at her and scared me to death because what did I do? Evidently, Ruthie has just been a very, very unhappy baby. Mm-hmm. She has cried most of the time. We learned that she did not eat, and what she did eat, she didn't keep down. She was not thriving. Everything about Ruthie was tragic. I don't know why, but for the time that we had her, as long as she was in my arms, she slept so soundly.
Totally content.
She ate like a little horse. She burped like a little longshoreman. She kept it down. She didn't spit up once the 4 days that we had her. And by the third day, she was smiling. And then I had the chance to be with all of the kids when they were examined by the doctor. And this is hard. They really believe that Ruthie was older than they were told that she was. The story had been that the mother was expecting and was going to do away with the baby if they didn't agree to take her, and that the day the baby was born, the mother gave them a call and said that she was bringing the baby and Ruthie was put in the bin. I was very skeptical of this after watching her for the 4 days because she was just doing too many things that were older. Either she's an exceptionally alert child, or she is older than that. When the doctor went through looking at the kids one by one, she too felt that Ruthie is probably, we thought she was 3 weeks, according to what the mother had said when she abandoned the baby. She's probably 6 or 7 weeks old and still under 5 pounds. Mm-hmm. She was not nourished. She was not cared for. But she's alive, and she is the most intense little baby. She's awake for long periods of time, and she just fixes her eyes on your eyes or on your face, and it's like you want to say, Ruthie, blink. She just is so intent on every expression that goes across her face, and you can be talking to someone else, and you look back at her, and you can literally feel it go through her body. Mm-hmm. She knows you're looking at her, and it's like she's just soaking it in and trying to inhale every little bit of attention that comes her way. And I believe God's got a family for her. I have prayed for that from the moment that I picked her up in my arms, that God would provide her a family because she needs that individual attention so badly.
Well, I think Cher kind of likes that little girl, don't you? And you know, Ruthie's one of many abandoned babies that need the love and care that you and I can help to provide.
Now, this program was recorded a few years back, and it is, indeed, a classic from the Compassion Radio Archives. Bram joins us now in studio.
Jim, you've done a marvelous job in the past few weeks helping to feather in some of the absolute classics of Compassion Radio with some of the new programming we've been doing concerning the Door of Hope. And I'm glad that we've been able to bring new and fresh stories to you, but it's also the power of a faithful heritage that has made Compassion Radio what it is today. And you've heard a lot of those programs, including today's, from that archive. And it's important for us to understand why we're bringing them back to you now. It's not just because they're incredible programs, but because the projects and the people that are mentioned here are living legacies. And they're people that are continuing to do the work that God wants done in some of the world's toughest places. And keep listening with us as we go, because as we go, you go with us. And we can't go unless you send us. So thank you for your faithful support. If you thought about supporting a Compassion Radio project or the ministry itself directly, consider starting that now, and perhaps even as a monthly continuing supporter. A gift of any size, $5, $10, $20, or maybe $50 a month, goes a huge distance into preparing the stories that bring the world of God's gospel alive and well today to your ears and hopefully to your hearts to change your life where you live today.
I know many of our listeners are well aware that Norm has had some health challenges, and we've just been praying fervently for him. And so when I sit and I listen to these classics and I'm putting them together to get back on the air,
It can be a challenge for me, I must say. But friends, you're going to continue to hear some of these wonderful Compassion Radio Classic programs as Bram, as you said, as we feather them in between some of the new and exciting projects that we're putting together.
The reason we're doing that, friends, is because we need to find our place in the continuity of the mission of Compassion Radio. And this next month, we begin the 74th year of ministry and outreach of what is now Compassion Radio. And we need you, friends. We need you today. We need you to step up and join us for this particular project for Door of Hope and for the projects to come. Please contact us today.
CompassionRadio.com. You can give safe and secure or give us a call. 800-868-2478. 1-800-868-2478.
Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And of course, Jim, the website.
CompassionRadio.com.
Thanks for joining us today, friends. Tune in tomorrow for the next Compassion Radio.